back.
Hi, Daff.
Hi, Mom. It feels weird being on this side.
Sorry. You've done the last two episodes, maybe three?
Three.
Sorry.
That's okay. I don't mind it. I like producing, if you will. Since you're doing all of the editing again, you have grace from me.
Oh, thanks. You're so kind. And I was working on a shorty to get out before you did the last shorty, maybe?
Okay, yeah.
I don't know either. Yeah, you did the Witch Elm and then the Nun, and then I was supposed to get out a shorty, which I didn't, which you got. You did one, which will go out this weekend. And then I was doing a shorty, which ended up being a longy, to fill in while I was working on the other longy one that I'm working on.
Your shoddy didn't work out so well.
No, because you're going to see that the shorty, and I'm air quoting here.
Shoddies.
I'm old and I don't say that. The short one that I was working on ended up, it's a two-parter. So we'll just go with that. And the long one that I was working on when I started working on this air quote short one,
yeah,
might also be a two-parter.
Nice.
But I'm not done with it because I switched gears to work on this one.
I know. I simultaneously at all times have about 3 to 4 that I'm working on.
3 to 2?
3 to 2. No, I was going to say 3 to 4. I just stopped saying it because my allergies are really bad because I love my new cat, but I'm like real allergic to him. But it's okay. I'll suffer.
Great.
Suffer because I love his love. He's so sweet. We named him Rocket.
We did name him Rocket.
Because he's a rocket ship.
He is a rocket ship.
He talks like a rocket ship.
It's also because our new puppy's name is Groot. And it's Guardians of the Galaxy themed. And I love Guardians of the Galaxy.
I feel like we need to drop the bomb because people probably are like, why the fuck do they have so many dogs? My mom is a dog breeder.
Not yet.
Well, in the process of becoming one. The only problem is we bought puppies that are all the same age.
And related. No, just kidding.
No, we did not do that. So yes, Groot is our newest boy, except for Rocket is actually newer than Groot.
But Rocket's a cat and we're not breeding him.
No.
He's going to get neutered ASAP.
Yeah, he's getting neutered before this episode will even be live. He'll be ballless.
For sure.
All right. Speaking of cats, are you ready to hear my disturbing fact?
Oh, wait. Hold on 1 minute. Because I just want to say anybody who's anti-dog breeding, I'm sorry. I was also anti-dog breeding. And I have had a million rescues in my life. And I just want to be a responsible breeder of super popular Frenchie dogs because I feel like there's going to be a lot of health issues because they're so popular and they already have health issues. And so I want to make the most healthy dogs that I can. So when they get homes, people aren't buying a dog that's A, expensive, and then B, going to have all kinds of health issues and cost the dog a lot of anxiety and sadness and pain, as well as the people who give that dog a home. So I want to be
animal welfare.
I want to be part of the good side of breeding. So that's what I'm doing. No cages. Everybody's fucking running around my house, chewing all my shit up and sleeping in my bed. And it's a madhouse. But that being said, we have no carpet and we mop a lot. So our house does not stink because I would imagine you guys are like, oh, God. But no.
No, it's
we're
actually
kind of clean people.
It's
kind of.
No, it's actually, I would say our floor is very clean. It's just puppies.
Yeah.
No, they're just crazy. But we love them so much.
We do.
I looked at my mom the other day and my little old lady Shih Tzu, who had to be in the hospital all of last weekend because she's sick and old.
And she's a rescue.
Oh, yeah. She's the love of my life.
And we got her with a heart condition. And now she has the heart condition, high blood pressure and epilepsy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Poor baby. And she was there for epilepsy related issues.
And I would say she's a product of bad breeding.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. She's a purebred Shih Tzu.
Mm-hmm.
And was locked in a breeder's house forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she wasn't a mom dog, that's for sure.
No.
Yeah, she definitely has no compassion for puppies. I can promise you that. She was not a mom dog.
Okay, so back to your disturbing fact.
Okay, yes.
Oh, wait, but you were saying to me the other day about Pixie. Sorry,
you just totally cut me off.
Yeah, because we went in a different direction.
Oh, yeah, we absolutely did.
Okay.
No. I was saying about Pixie that I looked at her. So I'm the one who started the Frenchie thing because I got the first one for my mom for Christmas, as because my mom worked in the vet industry for a bajillion years. Sorry not to age you.
Well, okay. I started when I was super young, like a teenager.
Yeah, my mom started in the vet industry young and worked there forever. And then in the last couple of years, all I've gotten like 10 times a day is TikToks of Frenchies. And so it was like, what can we do that's actually going to bring my mom joy? How about a puppy? And so then we got Fwan. And then
Franny.
Yeah, Franny TT. The tiny terrorist.
Who's now giant.
who's a huge dog.
She turned into an extra large Frenchie.
Yeah, she looks like she ate an extra large Frenchie.
Poor Fwan.
And then her brother, we ended up adopting her brother as well because we were like, we'd rather do two puppies at once. And it worked out so well because he's my baby angel. He's also the love of my life. He's my dog. And then we were like, oh, fuck, we need their little sister.
Well, we had
their little half sister who's blue.
We had already talked about getting a puppy from one of his other litters before we ended up getting Fran's brother. So it wasn't. Yeah. So then that happened. And so, then it just kept going from there.
Yeah, well, that's what Pixie and I had this conversation about that we were arguing about the other day. She was like, Mom, I don't think it was a good idea that you started with the first one. And then you encouraged the next two. So you, like, the first three you were a part of, Mom. And this is my shih tzu, right? And I was like, well, Pixie, I don't know whose idea ever was and a good idea to have six of them at the same time. And then I looked at Pixie and I go, I like old bitches. And she started dancing. It was awesome.
That is awesome.
Yeah, I was like, I like old bitches. And she started dancing and we had so much fun.
Yes.
Because now she's feeling a lot better.
She is feeling a lot better. Thank goodness.
Yeah, my poor baby girl.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, back to cats and the disturbing fact.
All right.
Because we also have three cats, all rescues.
Yep.
Two of which at this point have just shown up at our house.
Yep.
And the other one made me think she was lovable. And this is kind of about her.
She played you.
Yeah, she played me. My cat, who was dear love of mine, passed away and I was so depressed. And so I went to the shelter and for a cat that was like his... I think he was a rag doll, but this cat was a Himalayan. And I was like, oh, I need this cat. And then Aurora was there. And then I fell in love with her. And then I brought her home. And it was like, ha, big mistake. Big mistake loving a little bitch like her.
Aw. No, she's just not very lovable.
Yeah,
she's lovable. She's just not very loving back. Let's say that. Or it's on her terms.
Well, that's like how most cats. Yeah, I was going to say, except for Rocket. He's so sweet. He wants love 24/7.
Yeah.
Okay. Any hoodles. On to the disturbing fact. Aurora is an indoor-outdoor cat.
Mm-hmm. Not by our choice. Her choice.
Yeah. Well, she was found in Aurora, Colorado. And that's how she got her name.
Yes.
A stray there.
And also, Sleeping Beauty's your favorite princess, and Sleeping Beauty's name is Aurora.
Yes.
So it just worked out.
It did. It just worked out. I mean, that wasn't the name the shelter gave her. I gave her that name.
Right.
And she says it back to me. It's awesome. I go, hi, Arara. She goes, Arara. Anyway, Aurora, indoor, outdoor. She bitches and cries outside. And you know why she does that? It's because she's bringing us home prey. Mm-hmm. She's bringing us home a meal because she thinks we're incapable of feeding ourselves. And so she's bringing us home food. Also, perhaps as a sign of her love for us. So I had this thought, like, I would say a year ago, because most of the time she only eats the heads off of whatever she killed.
Or she lately eats everything except for the insides, the bladder and the intestines.
We're going to talk about this, too.
But everything else, gone.
Yeah. So, but when she's not very hungry and she's just on a thrill kill
and needs a snack,
she'll eat the head. And it says because they're very nutritious that they like to eat the head. They're filled with phosphorus, which sharpens their hunting skills. And it's like the most nutrient dense part of an animal.
The brain?
The brain.
Okay.
But also the reason why cats eat organs is also because they're so nutrient dense. But with smaller prey, it said that cats usually eat the head first. And then they go into eating the rest of the body, including, you know, all the fur and bones or feathers or whatever, you know, they're eating. Mm-hmm. But then they can't digest all of that stuff. And so they'll regurgitate it a couple hours later. So I'm surprised they haven't found any bones anywhere.
Gross.
Surprised they haven't found any baby bunny bones.
Ugh.
Yep. So there's one part that they will not eat one or part of one organ that they just will not eat.
The bladder.
Nope. It's the gizzard, the part of the stomach, because it's so high in acid, they know not to touch it. All the stomach acid. Yeah. And then also, I found this Quora answer and by this lady who is a breeder of Savannah cats. So she's quite knowledgeable on the subject, obviously. She said, unless they are famished or have fears of going hungry, domestic cats usually don't gorge themselves in a meal. If they're catching their own prey foods, they will eat the favorite, most nutritious, and perishable organs first.
Nice.
So the brain and all of the insides.
Right.
And then when they feel full, they'll often bury what is left. And this way, they don't, you know, other animals can't sniff out their kill. And so they can go back to it later. And then it says later, if they're hungry, they'll go back and they'll finish the rest if they haven't caught anything new. And then it said that they also, this made me laugh, that cats who are well fed, so like Aurora, who goes inside and eats and then goes outside and kills, they lose the urge to hide their unfinished meals.
Yes, that's true. I was just going to say, when you said they bury it and stuff, I'm like, really? So they leave it on the back porch or the front porch that's considered burying it?
Right.
And then the dogs go out there and try to eat it, and then, ugh, we have to hose it, and I have to, yeah, it's gross. I don't clean it, but I make someone else do it.
Yeah, anyone else do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just thought that that was funny. And it says that, you know, they just bring them to you because of love. They're telling you it's there because they love you.
Well, we did have the other indoor-outdoor cat that we had that we rescued that we didn't have for very long because he was diabetic when we got him. But anyway, he would bring whole rabbits in, like big rabbits, and they would be in like the dog beds or, oh, I think one time, I mean, there are times when they were in the living room, I think one time in the bedroom, like, here you go. And like a full size freaking rabbit.
Yeah. A full size cottontail bunny.
Yeah. Like, here you go. You look hungry.
Yeah. And one time my mom thought it was our chihuahua and that he had killed our little baby boy.
I didn't think he'd killed Diego. I thought Diego was dead in the dog bed because I just saw these white feet up in the air and I was like, oh shit. And then I went out there and it was a giant rabbit. And so then I just made Daphne's dad put it in, take the whole dog bed and put it in the trash. And yeah. He's like, oh, I'll just, I'm like, no, you won't. The whole thing is out, 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 out.
And it's really awesome. And when we get to 1 million Instagram followers, I'll post this video of my dad chasing my mom around with the mouse that Kiki had half eaten. And it's the funniest video in the world. So I'm just going to need 1 million Instagram followers before that happens.
So in the next 15 years.
Yeah, basically. All right, Mom, what you got for us today? I think we've done enough rambling.
Oh, you're ready for everything. Me? Shoot, I didn't even know I was still here.
Whatever.
All right. As I said, I was going to do a shorty, but then it became a longie because I thought that I, as always, when I'm looking into a case, I'm like, oh, I know this case.
Go shoddy.
No. I didn't know this case. So I'm going to say trigger warning for a child criminal, trigger warning for child murders. So if you don't want to hear it, then kids who kill and kids who kill kids. So don't, if you don't want to listen, I totally get it because that's not the kind of stuff that I normally like to cover, like to hear, or like to do, which is clearly why I didn't really know about this case. And I just thought I did.
Yeah.
Clearly never really paid attention to it or really actually tuned in. So that being said, in addition to that, I also thought this case was super old. I thought it was like from the 19th century, which would be the 1800s, Daphne.
Thank you.
And it actually happened in the 60s, the late 60s. So
the 20th century plus 60.
Yes. Yeah. So, all right. This is the story of the Tyneside Strangler, also known as the Mary Bell story. So here we go. Let's get into it.
Strap in.
All right. Mary was known as a child who got into trouble in her neighborhood. She was known to have unpredictable behavior both at home and at school, and she got into fights with other children, and on more than one occasion, she tried to choke the kids that she was fighting with, including her classmates and even like her friends, her playmates, like kids, hey, come over and let's play. Oh, I'm gonna strangle you.
So she's unhinged as fuck.
Yeah, she's got some issues.
And how old is she?
Well,
when she's trying to kill her friends?
At the time of the killings, she was 10 and 11. And so this behavior is throughout her life building and building as she gets older. I'm older, 10, 11.
Right.
So, yeah. These altercations were broken up by teachers, school staff, and other adults that were witness to these events. Once it was said that she even tried to block a girl's throat with sand. She had the girl pinned down and she was like shoving sand into her mouth.
What the fuck?
Mm-hmm. So, obviously, kids don't really want to play with her and hang out with her.
Yeah, no.
Also, obviously, there was no intervention and nothing was really done.
Yeah.
Because it continues to escalate, as we know.
Right. What the fuck?
Right. So she spent most of her time with a neighbor girl whose name was Norma Bell, and they are not related at all. And Norma was about 2 years older than Mary.
Okay.
All right. So Mary's 10, Norma's 12, that kind of thing. That kind of 2 year difference.
That kind of 2 year age gap.
Right. In addition to the instances of choking other children and trying to kill that one girl with
sand,
yeah.
Trying to make her choke to death and scratch her insides.
Yeah. I also read one account that said on May 11th of 1968, so again, I'm telling you, the late 60s, and I totally thought it was like the 1800s. A three-year-old boy was found wandering, dazed, and bleeding from his head. The boy told his parents, and later he also told police, because his parents took him to the police, that he had been playing with Mary and Norma around an old bomb shelter and had been pushed off the roof, falling 7 feet.
A bomb shelter?
And he's 3 years old.
Where are they located that they're by a bomb shelter?
Well, they're in Newcastle, England.
England. I don't think you said that yet.
Sorry. Well, Tyneside, Strangler, England, Newcastle area.
Yeah, well, I feel like you have to spell that out.
Sorry. That was totally my bad. But we have bomb shelters here in the United States, too.
Where?
Like places where we were afraid we were going to get bombed. I don't know. But we did because
people, I mean, I've seen like tornado shelters, but
yeah,
not.
Yeah, but people, like, you know, bombing was a thing, but like, so these
bombing
were,
is still a thing.
Well, and these were leftover bomb shelters from like World War II. So they're not like atomic bombs, which will end you. Like a bomb shelter is not going to do shit for you.
Right.
But like whatever kind of bombs they were using. I'm not a bomb expert, so sorry. But anyway,
it's not bombtastic.
It's not. So they were playing around an old bomb shelter, and he said that he had been pushed off the roof of the bomb shelter, and he fell approximately 7 feet, and he suffered lacerations to his head. And he didn't know which girl had pushed him.
Oh, God.
But obviously one of them had, right? And he's three. He's 3 years old.
Shit.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that he survived.
Yeah, it's crazy. And so at this time, Mary Bell was 10 years old.
Oh, gosh.
Mm-hmm. So the same day, it was also said that together, the two of them tried to strangle three girls. So,
what the fuck?
Mm-hmm. When police questioned the girls, Mary denied any of it happened. And Norma, on the other hand, said that Mary went up to one of the girls and said, "What if I strangle someone? Do they die?" Then she wrapped her hands around the girl's neck and squeezed until she started to turn purple. And Norma said she told Mary to stop, but she didn't stop. And then she stuck her hand down another girl's throat because they're trying to break it up, right? And then, so she puts her hand down another girl's throat, trying to, like, hurt this other girl, obviously, like, suffocate her by her fist. And then another girl came in and Mary attempted to strangle her as well. So no action was taken against the girls. So the toddler, the three-year-old kid's parents went to the police. Also, these other three girls, their parents went to the police. All this is reported to the police.
And no one did shit about it.
Nobody did shit about it. So no action was taken. They were just given a verbal warning by the police. Both of these particular instances were brought to authorities and little was done. Like, oh, no, no, don't do that. So there are several red flags and warning signs of potential for escalation in violence and violent behavior, and they were ignored or at least not taken seriously. And so, you know, there was no preventative action taken.
Which, yeah, that sounds like that should definitely be a thing that happens, because that's pretty fucking violent for a 10 and 12 year old.
Well, and I don't know if we know in the late 60s, like we do now, that that kind of behavior escalates. That it's not like if you've done it 3 or 4 times already and first you're choking somebody, then you're literally strangling someone until they turn purple. You're shoving sand down someone's throat. You're pushing a kid off of a 7-foot roof and he's a freaking toddler. Like, there's an escalation here.
Yeah.
Like, it's
you're
not
trying to kill someone.
Yeah. It's not a one and done kind of thing. It's like just pushing the boundaries to see how far you can go. And they're not getting in any, they're not getting any consequences.
No.
So they just are going to continue to go, you know?
I'm confused though. Like, did the boy thing happen before or after the girls, the 3-year-old?
I think the 3-year-old thing happened more like in the morning and the girls happened more like late afternoon, early evening. So because that little boy was found, like I said, wandering around bleeding and dazed and confused, and he was 3. So that has to be like earlier in the day, right? Otherwise, why is a 3-year-old out at night kind of thing?
Yeah.
And then all the girls were, quote unquote, like playing together.
Okay.
And then that's when that happened.
So I feel like,
but it's on the same day.
So I feel like since Norma threw Mary under the bus and was like, oh, yeah, she choked this girl till she turned purple.
Mm-hmm.
Then why the fuck is she still hanging out with her after she threw a 3-year-old off a building?
Well, we'll get to that.
Fucking twisted.
It is twisted. So on May 25th, 1968, Mary somehow lured 4-year-old Brian Martin to an abandoned house and she strangled him. And that I don't have like a ton of information about that because there are no witnesses to that. Only the things that they're witnesses to and things that came out later that we know more about other stuff. But this one, we just don't have very much information other than she did it, right? Other than she just strangled him. And we know that she has a history of strangling. So Martin's body was found by 3 kids who came to play in the abandoned house about 3:30 in the afternoon. Martin was laying on his back with his arms outstretched over his head, kind of crucifixion style. No signs of violence. So no signs of violence, except that he had blood and saliva around his mouth. And there was an empty aspirin bottle found near his body as well. So the kids who found Martin went and found a local worker named John Hall, who entered the scene and tried to revive Martin. He looked up at some point while he was trying to revive Martin to see Mary and Norma standing in the doorway watching. And remember, they're in an abandoned house, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The guy, John, he told them to leave. He's like, get out of here, like, get out of here. So they left and they immediately went to go find Martin's aunt. And they told her that there had been an accident and that they thought the accident involved Martin and that there was blood everywhere. And then they offered to lead Martin's aunt to Martin's body.
What the fuck?
Mm-hmm. So again, there's no blood at the scene other than a tiny little bit around his mouth. So it's also this, like, you know, shock value or like,
yeah, they're trying to be more gory than
right
what they've actually done.
Right.
And that fucking nastiness of like how they say serial killers or killers or whoever, not necessarily serial killers, I'm sorry, but killers will be like involved in the searches for people.
Yeah. And insert themselves into an investigation and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So they obviously just went to go fuck with this kid's family. That's like, what the fuck, man? After the discovery of Martin's body and in the days following, the girls kept going back to Martin's aunt's house and asking her questions that were totally like freaking her out. And she thought it was super strange. They asked her questions like, do you miss Martin? Do you cry for him? Does June miss him? And June was Martin's mom. So the girls always had what she would say were like these creepy smiles on their faces. And finally she was like, don't come back.
Yeah.
Like, just go. Do not come back.
So they ended up killing him. He did. He died.
Yeah, he died.
Oh my gosh. But
I think on that one, I think Mary was on her own. I don't think that Norma was with her. Just based on later that Norma has no information regarding Martin's death. So.
Okay.
But, yeah. Okay.
What the fuck? Do you miss him? What the fuck?
Does his mom cry for him? Like, yeah. Seriously, it's so fucked
up. It's twisted.
It's so fucked up. So Dr. Bernard Knight, the coroner who performed the autopsy on Martin's tiny little body, found no signs of foul play, and the death was ruled possible drug poisoning because of the empty bottle that was next to his body. However, his cause of death officially remained open because they just weren't for sure, right?
There weren't any marks around his neck?
No, because she's a little girl. She's 10 years old.
Yeah, but he's a 4-year-old. His body would probably bruise easier.
Yeah, he's there was no signs of foul play.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's really scary.
It's really sad. So the community, obviously overwhelmed by Martin's death. And, you know, again, it was in this abandoned building, right? So they marched and protested against the dangerous conditions of the abandoned buildings in the neighborhood. And Mary was present for the protests, carrying a banner that was asking for change for the local residents with another child. So they're carrying like this sheet kind of thing that has like sticks on either side with stuff written on it about change for the tenants and stuff. And this was even photographed, and this picture was in the local papers.
Oh, geez.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly the killers inserting themselves.
Exactly. So I don't think the other girl was Norma, though, in the picture, but for sure the one girl is Mary Bell.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's so like, wow. On May 26th, which is the next day after Martin's strangling, which also happens to be Mary's 11th birthday.
Is she going to go celebrate by being a real fucking asshole again?
Yeah, pretty much.
She's like, happy birthday to me. I'm 1 year older. I'm going to strip somebody of the rest of theirs.
Yeah, she's a mess.
She's a fucking, yeah, like, I want to know where her parents are. That's what I want to know. Like, does anybody... Obviously, nobody's out there looking out for her. Like, that's obvious.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that, too.
Clearly, mm-hmm. though, there's nobody looking out for this little girl.
Yeah. Something's obviously going on here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the day after the strangling of Martin, May 26, 1968, because she's 11, Mary was found by Norma's father trying to strangle Norma's little sister.
What the fuck?
Mm-hmm. So fortunately, her dad walked in and broke up the violent encounter. But why would her dad still let Norma go hang out with her?
Right.
That's what I don't get. It's like, if I saw one of your friends strangling your younger sibling that you don't have.
My imaginary younger sibling.
Yeah.
My older sibling, Troy Jr.
Yeah. I wouldn't let you go hang out with that person anymore. So, but again, the incident's not taken seriously.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, shame on you. Don't do that again. Like,
right.
Yeah. It's. Yeah.
Not actually trying to solve any issues.
Well, this is over and over and over again a failure, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I would say it's a massive letdown to the people who were obviously going to be in danger because of the little girl.
Right.
And because of Mary Bell. And it's a letdown to Mary Bell that she keeps getting away with all of this. Not that it's a letdown, but you know what I mean? Like, there's fucking consequences for your actions.
Yeah. Or not.
There should be.
Right. And clearly this is kind of a lower middle class neighborhood, let's say, because they're living amongst abandoned buildings and stuff. So they got to be kind of, you know, a lower class group of people, income area, whatever right. you want to call it.
I've been to Tyneside before.
Have you?
I have. In Newcastle.
Was it nice?
I don't remember.
Okay, then.
I remember I liked Newcastle a lot. I think Tyneside is a... by the area where it's like the rocky beach. That's really beautiful. Like, it's all just pebbles.
I guess we could look it up, but not right now.
Yeah.
We could get back to it.
Sorry. I was just thinking that.
No, that's okay.
I was like, you know, I think I'm like a pretty 99% sure I've been there.
Nice.
When I went to Newcastle.
Nice. After they left Norma's house, again, why the dad is like, yeah, sure, go play with Mary. It's cool.
Yeah.
Right. They broke into a nursery school and they vandalized it.
Oh, my gosh.
They tore up books and turned over furniture, smeared ink and poster paint on the walls, and then they left. The next day, the staff came in and found the damage, and police surveying the scene found notes. One read, quote, I kill people to come back. Another note read, quote, you killed Martin Brown, you bastard. The next note read, stop us killing people. Beware of Fanny and Faggot. The final note said, quote, you rats, because we killed Martin. Go Brown. Beth's watch out. There's a murder going on by Fanny and Old Faggot. Screw. The police dismissed this as a prank.
Oh, my goodness.
Albeit a tasteless prank, but like, it's a prank.
Are you fucking kidding?
No. And again, these girls are 11 and 13.
Okay. So they're like, we're going to dismiss this. Like, that seems pretty sus, but we're going to say there's a potential drug overdose of a 4-year-old and he just did it to himself.
Right.
They're not looking for anyone who could have killed him with being like, take all of this aspirin, little Martin.
Right.
Instead, no. They're like, oh, this is nothing. It's fine. It's cool. What the fuck?
Yeah, it's all a big mess. And like I said, it was left open, but since there were no obvious signs of foul play, there wasn't really any direction for them to take. But then you have this.
Yeah.
But I mean, the police just took it as like it was a cruel prank, a joke, because, you know, because people do that when people die. People do fucked up shit.
I mean, yes. That
actually don't even have anything to do with it, you know?
Yes, but I feel like they have nothing going anywhere. And so this could at least be, even if it went to nothing,
something to look into.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. At school, Mary drew a picture in her journal of a little boy laying dead, arms outstretched, crucifixion style, with a bottle next to him labeled, in quotes, tablet. This was seen by a teacher, but this did not strike her as odd. Okay, like, fuck, people.
Yeah, what the fuck? Well, I mean, I feel like in that instance, it's because probably she was there, remember? She was in the doorway. Obviously, mm-hmm. You remember. You were the one who covered this. Obviously, you remember. But you remember, know, she's in the,
from 5 minutes ago.
But she was in the doorway.
Yes, she was.
So maybe that's what the teacher, you know.
Well, the teacher said that she did ask Mary about it, but she said she was just drawing what she heard. However, none of the other children drew or wrote anything about Martin's death, because that's kind of weird.
Yeah,
like as an 11-year-old to like be drawing someone's death.
Yeah.
Or writing about it.
It's very weird.
Yeah. On May 29th, 1968, the day of Martin's funeral, the girls went up to Martin's house and his mother, June, answered the door and they asked to see Martin, which she replied, Martin is dead. And Mary replied, quote, oh, I know your son is dead. I just want to see him in his coffin.
What the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
What the actual fuck?
Yeah. So apparently, later it came out that this was a dare between the two girls, and Mary's the one that went and did it. But, like, Norma and Mary had, like, dared each other, like, who's gonna go do it?
Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm. So, of course, the boy's distraught mother was floored by this comment.
Yeah,
and she told Mary to leave at once.
Well, and I'm sure she and her sister were talking about the fact that, you know, Mary kept going to them and asking questions.
Yeah, both of them, Mary and Norma together, kept going up to the aunt.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm sure that they were talking about the fact that the girls, you know, kept going to the aunt and being like, do you miss him? Are you guys crying for him?
Yeah, so fucked up. So fucked up.
Yeah.
So in early that's July.
Just like, I'm sorry. It's just like taunting.
That's okay. Well, exactly. It's taunting. It's like adding salt to the wounds. It's poking the bear. It's all of those things. It's like, you know what you did. Like, why? Well, because it's for your fucking amusement.
Yeah.
It's your amusement, which is.
Because they're both little bitches.
Well, it's not even that. They're just super fucked up.
No, they're both little bitches.
They are. But I mean, that's beyond bitchy behavior. That's super fucked up.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree. It's beyond bitchy behavior. It's like actually psychotic.
Yeah, exactly. So in early July, they tried to break into the nursery school again, but the school had an alarm system installed and the girls were caught in the act, but they denied it. They were turned over to their parents and they were scheduled to make an appearance in juvenile court. So you would think with the combination of this violence and the two break-ins that the police would, you know, have some red flags, be like, hey, this seems suspicious. But no. So business as usual for the two girls. There's no consequences. So they can just keep on keeping on. Keep on doing what they're doing. Yeah. It's like, oh, it's so messed up.
Yeah.
So messed up.
That's why I feel like I'm at a loss for words. It's just like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
What is in their water?
It's all bad.
Like, what?
On July 31st, 1968, Brian Howe, a 3-year-old boy, let his parents sleep in while he tended to his younger sibling, making breakfast and such. He's 3.
That's so sweet.
I know, right? Then he went out to play. And that just tells you, like, the maturity level, because the one boy was 4 and the other boy that they pushed off the thing was 3 and he was out there playing by himself.
Yeah.
Like, so like, I don't know, maybe it's just the environment that these kids are living in, that they're growing up faster. They don't have nannies and such, you know, but anyway, so he let his parents sleep in. He made breakfast for his little brother or sister. I can't remember. But anyway, younger sibling, and he's 3. So then he went out to play. Around 12:30 or so, Brian returned home and asked his dad for some money to buy candy. Then he went off, presumably, to buy some candy. Unfortunately for Brian, he somewhere along the way ran into Mary and Norma. Oh, fuck. And somehow it's not exactly known how Mary and Norma lured Brian into an area that was just like a patch of waste ground that was known as the Tin Lizzie.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so it's like where people just throw shit, like construction stuff, and like it's just miscellaneous. So it's like
a dumpish.
Yeah, it's a dumpish area. Yeah. So Mary strangled Brian while she held his nostrils closed. And after he was dead, she took a pair of scissors that she brought with her and cut off some of the curls of his hair. Then she proceeded to stab him in the thighs, leaving puncture wounds. Then she took out a razor blade she had also brought with her, and she mutilated the toddler's penis, partially skinning it.
What the fuck?
Mm-hmm. Then she carved an N on Brian's stomach to, like, implicate Norma. But then she changed her mind and she added in another line to make it an M because she wants credit because she's the one that did it.
Right.
So, like, at first, I'm going to do this so that if we get caught, Norma gets in trouble. But no, wait, I did it, so I'm signing my initial. Like, I...
What did she do with his hair that she cut off?
It didn't say. Just that she cut off some of his curls. So, I don't know if she left them there or she took them or... I'm assuming she probably just left them there. She probably just cut it and left it.
Just to fuck you?
Yeah. Just to do it. So when Brian had not returned that afternoon, his family and other neighbors began searching for him. Mary went to Brian's house and asked his sister, Pat, if she was looking for Brian. And they were very happy. So Mary and Norma went to Brian's house. And they were very happy to volunteer to help her look for him. And they led her through the neighborhood looking everywhere for him. Obviously, they knew where he was the whole time, right?
Yeah.
So they went into an industrial area where the kids from the neighborhood often played with abandoned construction materials, old cars, and miscellaneous discarded items. Mary then pointed to some large concrete blocks and said, maybe he's over there. And then Norma said, oh no, he never plays there. And Pat ended up leaving to go search elsewhere or to go home and wait for Brian. Norma later said that Mary wanted Pat to find Martin to shock her.
Of course.
Yeah, like, oh, so messed up. So Martin ended up being found by police about 11:30 p.m. between two concrete blocks on the Tin Lizzie where Mary had tried to lead Pat to earlier.
It sounds like maybe Norma was a little remorseful, perhaps, if she's like, oh, no, he doesn't play over there. Don't actually go over there.
Or she doesn't want to get caught.
Yeah.
One of the two.
Either remorseful or, yeah, just a pussy.
Yeah, not wanting to get caught. So the body was slightly covered by clumps of grass and weeds, and there was a broken pair of scissors that lay at Brian's feet. During the autopsy, the coroner concluded that because of the force with which Brian was strangled, and it was so very light-handed that it had to be a child that was the killer.
Good. Finally.
Right.
They're on to something.
Also,
that they should have been on to before.
Yeah, well, it should have never happened. Well, given the escalation.
Well, yeah, obviously. But finally, they're like starting to, you know,
be like, oh, hey,
connect some dots here.
Yeah. Well, they're not. I don't think they are connecting dots at this point, but they just know that it's a child that's done this. Because at this point, they still think Martin's murder is or Martin's. Yeah. Martin's death is an accidental overdose. So
I don't know how a child accidentally overdoses.
Well, because they take pills they're not supposed to take. Because that was before, like, safety bottles, safety lids and stuff.
Yeah, but a pill doesn't taste like candy. They put it in their mouth and they spit it out and go, ugh,
yeah, that's you would gross. Think. However, it does happen. Or it did happen. That's why everything's childproof nowadays. Numerous gray and maroon fibers were found on Brian's clothes and shoes. And it was clear that the killer had transferred these to the child's clothes. After Brian's murder, there was a massive search for Brian's killer. More than 1,200 children were questioned. Two of the children interviewed were Mary and Norma, who investigators were told were seen playing with Brian the day of his murder. Their demeanor seemed a little off to investigators. Norma seemed excited to be interviewed, and Mary was unemotional and detached from the murder of such a young child. The two girls were vague with their answers and contradicted each other's statements. They did, however, admit to playing with Brian, but only in the morning and not after lunch.
Okay.
So the next day, August 2nd, 1968, Mary was was questioned again, but she told investigator James Dobson that she had seen Brian with an older boy who was around 8 years old, who she had seen beating Brian. She also remembered that Brian was covered in grass and weeds like he'd been rolling in a field. He was also holding a pair of scissors. And then Mary said, quote, I saw him trying to cut off a cat's tail with scissors. Something was wrong. One leg was either broken or bent. And I'm assuming she was referring to the cat.
Shit.
Yeah. So investigators had not released any information about the scissors. And so Dodson at that point knew that Mary was the killer. And just to be sure, Dodson interviewed the parents of the boy who Mary had accused of being with Martin, and he wasn't even in town that day. And the fact that he was out of town was corroborated by other witnesses.
Okay, yeah. So she's trying to throw them off of her scent.
Right, however.
Except for she's giving up information that only the killer would know.
Exactly. So on August 4th, the parents of Norma Bell had their daughter go to the police station and confess all that she knew about Brian's death to the investigators. Norma told Dobson that Mary had taken her to the Tin Lizzy to show her Brian's body. Mary then demonstrated how she had strangled Brian, and Mary told her that she liked strangling him. She led Dobson to the site of the murder and then led him to the hidden razor blade that Mary had hidden under a rock.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. So on August 5th, Norma, again with investigators, took a very different approach. She took a defensive stance. She contradicted her earlier statements, and she told detectives, quote, you are trying to brainwash me. Call me a lawyer to get me out of this matter. I'll do it. It was on this day that Norma ended up giving a full statement, admitting that she was present at the time of the crime. Further forensic analysis of the fibers found on Brian's clothes were an exact match to a gray wool dress Mary owned and maroon textiles on shoes owned by Norma.
Oh, geez.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Norma's like, oh, I wasn't there, but she showed me where it was. And it's like, okay, no, Norma was there at the time.
Right. Yeah. Well, she ended up confessing, but yeah, we'll get there later.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. This is so fucked.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And it's so sad because this is in those times, I feel, that, like, you know, not that there wasn't a regard for child safety, but it was much different than it is today, you know, where kids are out riding their bikes and they're out playing. And today it's like parents aren't cool with that, you know, at least unsupervised. They're not cool with that.
Well, it's so weird because since we've been doing the podcast, obviously, and before that, it's like, you know, this stuff has gone on since the beginning of time because people are people are people. But now we just hear about it like right away. And something happens. It's on social media. It's on the news. It's on the next door neighborhood apps. It's like, it's everywhere.
Right.
But this shit was happening centuries ago and it just wasn't
as widespread.
Yeah, it wasn't so public. It wasn't like made so known right away. But people are people are people.
Yeah.
Nothing has changed other than the fact that we're more diligent and cautious and, you know, more proactive in the approach we take to protecting ourselves and our kids.
Yeah, I think that's the difference, is the proactive that's happening today.
Because nothing's changed.
Versus maybe back then. Well, that's exactly. I mean, I knew that this stuff was happening, but it's just such a different time that maybe they don't think about it like they do today.
Right.
You know, where it's like, oh, fuck, like there's been 62 missing kids in this area. So maybe I'm not going to let my kid go outside and play today.
Right.
You know, exactly. Or my kid will be escorted to and from the bus. And
yeah, all of the things that you can do to protect your kid.
And like maybe they weren't doing back then. Like kids would just walk themselves to school and
3-year-olds were just out playing by themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Going to get candy.
Yeah.
So
very different times.
Very different times. August 7th, the day of Brian's funeral, which was attended by over 200 people, Dobson was planning on arresting the girls later that day. But he said he saw Mary standing outside the funeral home while Brian's coffin was being brought out. And later he said, quote, she was standing outside of there laughing and rubbing her hands. I thought, oh, my God, I have to get her. She'll do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's totally fair.
Totally fair.
I definitely would say that if, yeah, she'll do it again.
She will do it again. Dobson that evening went and arrested both Mary and Norma. And Mary replied, quote, that's fine. Norma broke down crying. And because Norma's crying, Mary's like, oh, shit. Mary said, quote, no, I will definitely pay you back. like giving her a warning, like, you better shut your fucking mouth, bitch.
Oh, God.
But she does it, you know, in front of investigators because they see it, they hear it.
Yeah.
So Mary then prepared a statement where she admitted to being present at Brian Howe's murder, but that Norma actually was the one that did the killing. She also admitted that the day after Martin Brown's murder, she and Norma broke into the Woodland Crescent Nursery School and vandalized the property, and that they're the ones that had left the four handwritten notes.
So if only they, like, I'm sorry, you can't see me, I'm rolling my eyes, but, like, you know, if only they would have, I don't know, fucking taken those notes seriously. I feel like even if they can just say, like, it's a prank, they should probably rule it as a prank after they do some digging.
Instead of just deciding it's a prank to begin with?
Yeah.
The following is Mary Bell's official statement. So this is her, this is exactly what she said, what she wrote, whatever.
Okay, let's hear it. Let's hear the twisted words of a twisted little fucking psychopath, please. Yeah.
I, Mary Flora Bell, wish to make a statement. I want someone to write down what I have to say. I have been told that I need not say anything unless I wish to do so, but whatever I say may be given in evidence. Signed, Mary F. Bell. It's hard, sorry, because she doesn't speak in sentences exactly. Okay, Brian was in his front street, and me and Norma were walking along towards him. We walked past him, and Norma says, quote, are you going to the shop, Brian? And I says, Norma, you've got no money. How can you go to the shop? Where are you going to get it from? She says, Nebby, keep your nose clean. Little Brian followed, and Norma says, walk up in front. I wanted Brian to go home, but Norma kept coughing so Brian wouldn't hear us. We went down Cross Hill Road with Brian still in front of us. There was this colored boy, and Norma tried to start a fight with him. She said, Darky, whitewash. It's time you got washed. The big brother came out, and he hit her, and he shouted, how way put your dukes up? The lad walked away and looked at her as though she was daft. We went beside Dixon's shop and climbed over the railings. I mean, through the hole and over the railway. Then I said, Norma, where are you going? And Norma said, do you know that little pool where the tadpoles are? When we got there, there was a big, long tank with a big round hole and little holes all around it. Norma said to Brian, are you coming in here? Because there's a lady coming on the number 82 and she's got boxes of sweets in that. We all got inside, and then Brian started to cry, and Norma asked him if he had a sore throat. Then she started to squeeze his throat, and he started to cry. She said, this isn't where the lady comes. It's over there by them big blocks. We went over to the big blocks, and she says, Ar, you'll have to lie down. And he lay down beside the blocks where he was found. Norma says, put your neck up. And then he did. Then she got a hold of his neck, and she said, put it down. She started to feel up and down his neck, and then she squeezed it hard. You could tell it was hard because her fingertips were turning white. Brian was struggling and was pulling her shoulders, but she went mad. I was pulling her chin up, but then she screamed at me. By this time, she had banged Brian's head on some wood or a corner of wood, and Brian was lying senseless. His face was all white and bluey, and his eyes were open. His lips were purplish, and he had, like, saliva on it. It turned out to be something like fluff. Norma covered him up, and I said, Norma, I've got nothing to do with this. I should tell on you, but I'll not. Little Lassie was there, and it was crying, and she said, don't you start, or I'll do the same to you. It cried, and she went to get a hold of his throat, but it growled at her, and she said, now, don't be hasty. We went home. Then I took a look at the little lassie, home and all. Norma was acting kind of funny, making twitchy faces, spreading her fingers out. She said, this time is the first time, but it'll not be the last. I was frightened then. I carried Lassie and put her down over the railway. See, I think this is all fucked up. Sorry. Put him down. I would say put him down. I think the quote is fucked up.
Okay.
So I think, I don't know.
Yeah.
So,
well, I think it's also a dialect problem.
Well, probably. So she put him down on the railway, and then we went up to Crosswood Road Way. Norma went to her house, and she got a pair of scissors, and then she put them down her pants, and she says, go and get a pen. And I said, no, for what? And she says, to write a note on his stomach, and I wouldn't get the pen. She had a Gillette razor blade. It had Gillette on it. We went to the blocks, and Norma cut his hair, and then she tried to cut his leg and his ear with the blade, and she tried to show me. She tried to show me it was sharp. She took the top of her dress where it was raggy and she cried out, which I don't know. She said she was wearing pants. And then she made a slit in it. A man came down the railway bank with a little girl with long blonde hair that had a red checkered skirt on and blue denim jeans. I walked away. She hid the razor blade under a big square concrete block. Then she left the scissors beside him. She got out before me over to the grass on the Scotswood Road. I couldn't run on the grass because I just had my black slippers on. When we got along a bit, she says, and they called Mary May sometimes. So she says, May, you shouldn't have done all that because you'll get into trouble. And I hadn't done nothing. I haven't got the guts. I couldn't kill a bird by the neck or throat or anything. It's horrible that. We went up the steps and we went home. I was nearly crying. I said, if Pat finds out, she'll kill you. Never mind killing Brian because Pat's more like a tomboy. She's always climbing on the old buildings and that. Later on, I was helping to look for Brian and I was trying to let Pat on that I knew where he was in the blocks, but Norma said, he'll not be over there. He never goes there. And Pat was convinced he wasn't there. I got shouted in about 7:30 and I stayed in. I got woke up about 11:30 and we stood in the door and as Brian had been found. The other day, Norma wanted to get put in a home. She says, you will run away with us. And I said, no. And she says, you'll get put in away in a home and you'll feed the little ones and murder them and then we'll run away again. I have the above statement and I have been told that I can correct it or alter it or add anything if I wish. The statement is true. I have made it my own free will. Mary Flora Bell.
I have so many thoughts.
I'll bet you do.
I have a lot of words.
Okay.
Okay. I don't even know where to begin. Okay. So I was like, this would be the perfect time for me to have a notepad and write down. Gillette probably doesn't want to be known for this. That's why they came up with the ad, best a man can be. Because fuck.
Right.
Yeah. What the fuck? Two, I forgot that Brian's dad gave him money to go get candy. I remember that's why he left, but I forgot, like, the money part of it until mm-hmm. you're talking about Norma doesn't have any money.
Mm-hmm.
So did they steal his money? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay. I don't know if the money was still with him or not.
I don't.
When he died.
That wasn't, I don't know.
Okay.
That wasn't information I have.
Okay. No, that's fine. I was just thinking that. And then another comment, the colored boy, I'm assuming either black or Indian, because Indian
well,
people.
Well, it said black.
It said colored.
Yeah, but then she said black get whitewashed.
Oh, yeah.
She said blackie get whitewashed or something.
Okay, so the black boy,
mm-hmm.
good for him for throwing back down with Norma because fuck that, fuck racism.
It's probably not even true.
But fuck racism?
Yeah, fuck racism, but it's probably not even true. It probably didn't even happen.
Yeah. Well,
she just is a good storyteller.
And it's like so gross to hear those things out of her mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's even more disgusting that, I mean, yes, I realize Norma's involved to some extent. And Norma's also equally as fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
But she's implicating Norma when it was her.
Exactly.
And that's fucked up.
It is.
Because she's like, oh no, I need to draw an M instead of an N on his, or not draw, I'm sorry, carve with a razor blade into his skin.
Right.
An M from this N I already made, because actually I'm the one who did it and I want the credit for it. I just have so many fucking thoughts, and like the sister thing, the sister Pat, that, you know, oh, we shouldn't be worried about Brian. He's already dead. Now we have to worry about Pat. Like, what the fuck?
Right.
Just what the fuck? So what, were they going to target Pat next? Probably.
Maybe. I don't know. They definitely obviously were afraid she was going to kick their asses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Or maybe they weren't. Maybe Mary just said it.
Yeah, I don't know. But what the fuck?
Right.
I just, it feels gross that you have a statement from her, that those are her words, because it just feels gross to hear what they have to say about things.
Sorry.
No. It doesn't feel gross that you, like, did it. It feels, the entire thing just feels you know what I mean? Like, when you hear the clips like that show that we watched, the Ted Bundy in his own words, whatever that Netflix show was.
Mm-hmm.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
I do exactly know what you're talking about.
Like, when he's, the Confessions of a Killer, Ted Bundy, that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the Dahmer one also. To hear them with their own voices talk about these things, I feel like makes it 100 times worse, because it's like, you already did it, now you're talking about it, like, gross. Like, it just makes me personally feel disgusting and vile.
I don't disagree.
You know?
So, but Mary lied.
I mean, yeah, but still, she's trying to, it makes it even worse that she lied, because now she's trying to, you know, like, write it off like it wasn't actually her. Yeah, I don't know. I just have a lot of feelings about this.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's horrible.
The whole thing's terrible. And like I said, I hate cases like this. And so here I am in the middle of it.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate it too. I hate all of it. I hate all of true crime, but it's fascinating.
It is fascinating.
I hate that people are capable of doing the fucked up shit that they do.
Yeah. And kid things are like,
I don't know. They're bad. Like, I can't even fucking clean up the carcasses that Aurora leaves behind. I can't do it. I scream. I remember one time one of my dad's friends was out back waiting for my dad, and he heard me scream because our old cat Kiki brought in a mouse, and he killed it. The mouse was dead, but he just kind of like left it there. And I was screaming, and my dad's friend came rushing into the house, and he goes, "Oh shit, I thought you were your 3-year-old cousin." I was like, "Yeah. I don't like that shit. I don't do blood."
Nice.
Yeah. I just can't even fathom how a child could do these things.
Right. A fucked up child. Something's wrong. Something's going on.
Obviously. Yeah. Super clearly. Something is very, very wrong.
Very wrong. So Mary's statement had some partial truths, but obviously she placed most of the blame on Norma, or all of the blame on Norma.
I was going to say 100% of the blame. Right?
And the girls were, after their statements, were incarcerated at the Newcastle West End police station. Her statement also prompted investigators to consider Martin Brown's death as a homicide. In fact, Mary had also proclaimed after Martin's death, quote, "I am a murderer." But she was also known to be a show-off and to do things to get attention, so no one took her claim seriously. After the girls were arrested, they both underwent psychiatric evaluations. It was determined that Norma was intellectually slow and was definitely a follower and easily showed emotion. Mary, on the other hand, was smart and manipulative, and she would also have sudden and frequent mood swings. Dr. David Westbury wrote in an official report, "Mary's social methods are primitive, characterized by automatic denial, inclusion, manipulation, complaints, bullying, escapism. It takes the form of violence." Those were his conclusions about Mary.
Jeez. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it sounds about right.
Yeah.
Sounds fucking fitting.
Yeah.
Clearly Norma also has some problems, but you would think then, like, maybe Norma's parents would be like, "Hey, police, you know that she also tried to strangle our other daughter, right?" Norma, or
Mary.
Mary, not Norma. Yeah. Mary's the one trying to strangle. Yeah.
Mary's the one doing the strangling.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
That, you know, I mean, clearly Norma's not innocent, but like, what the fuck?
Right. Well, she's a follower.
Well, yeah. Poor kid.
Poor kid. Kinda. The jail was not used to housing children. Women guards were tasked with watching the children, and Mary refused to fall asleep, and if she actually did, she would wake very startled. On one occasion, Mary was seen trying to strangle a stray kitten that had made its home in the jail, and when a guard told her not to hurt the kitten, she said the kitten couldn't feel it, so it didn't matter, and that she liked hurting things that were smaller than her and couldn't fight back.
What the fuck?
Mm-hmm. She also told one of the guards that when she grew up, she wanted to be a nurse because she wanted to stick needles in people because she likes hurting people.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm. If her family life was the reason for this behavior, she wouldn't say anything. She was brought up with the mentality that you never ratted anyone out, and especially you never went to the cops about anything.
Oh, yeah. Just like the way she ratted Norma out.
Right.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Snitches get stitches.
But she was lying. So she wouldn't rat somebody out and tell the truth, apparently.
Well, she still ratted her out, even though clearly the confession was of her own.
Right.
Like, her own accounts of everything that she had done. She just switched the names.
Right. Exactly. Or who knows how much of what she actually said was true about what she did or didn't do. But, yeah.
Well, I feel like given the way that she's a show off, it probably is true.
Yeah. But who knows about the black kid and about the hiding in the thing, waiting for the woman with the candy. And yeah.
Like, I mean, I feel like that might be how they lured him.
Maybe. I mean, obviously they lured him somehow.
Right. Well, and he was going to get candy.
Yeah.
So.
At the girls' trial, the prosecution had ample evidence to prove to prove that the girls had committed the murders. Vandalism of the school and the notes that were left at the school were damning evidence. Handwriting analysis proved that the girls had written the notes. The fibers on Brian's clothes were from clothing belonging to both of the girls. They knew that he had been strangled before the information was public, and they also knew about the scissors. During the trial, Norma seemed remorseful, and she cried on the stand, and she was deemed as, quote, slow and having a non-dominant personality. Her family was also there to support her, and they hugged her and wiped away tears whenever they were allowed to approach her. Mary, on the other hand, was cold and completely unemotional, intelligent, and manipulative. She never cried, as she viewed crying a sign of weakness. She was clearly a leader and had a very strong personality. When her mother showed up in court, and I'm saying when her mother showed up in court, so her mom wasn't always there for her.
Jeez.
She wailed and she carried on and she made a scene.
Her mom did?
Mm-hmm. And she would dramatically storm out of the courtroom and then come back a few minutes later because she's trying, she's like, oh, the attention should be on me. Like,
oh my goodness.
Yeah, she's.
Yeah, your kid's on murder trial.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
What the fuck? So Billy, Mary's father, quote, her father, the only father that she ever knew, sat in court quietly and ignored Betty's antics. During closing arguments, the prosecution made Mary out to be a villain and Norma out to be a victim. In Norma, you have a simple, and this is a quote from the prosecutor. In Norma, you have a simple backward girl of subnormal intelligence. In Mary, you have a most abnormal child, aggressive, vicious, cruel, incapable of remorse, a girl moreover possessed of a dominating personality with a somewhat unusual intelligence and degree of cunning that is almost terrifying.
Yeah.
In attempting to rescue Mary from being cast off as demonic or as a bad seed, said Rudolph Lyons. He was the prosecutor. Mary's defense attorney, R.P. Smith, raised the questions to the jury like, why does this happen? What made Mary do it? It is very easy to revile a little girl to listen to her Svengali without passing for a moment to ponder, or sorry, without pausing for a moment to ponder how the whole situation has come about. A dictionary definition of a Svengali is a person who exercises controlling or mesmeristic influence on another, especially for sinister purposes.
Jeez.
Okay. So without answers...
Mary.
Yeah. So without answers to these questions, the jury of 5 women and 7 men in less than 4 hours returned their verdict. Norma was found not guilty of manslaughter on both counts. Mary was found guilty of manslaughter because of diminished responsibility in both Martin's and Brian's deaths. Her detention would be for an indeterminate amount of time.
Good.
In 1957, there was an act of parliament that said where a person kills or is a party to killing of another, he shall not be convicted of murder if he was suffering from an abnormality of mind, whether arising from condition of arrested or retarded development of mind or inherent causes or induced by disease or injury as substantially impaired for mental responsibility for his acts. So that's the definition of the diminished responsibility, which is why she was only found guilty of manslaughter and not murder.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess that makes sense because she's clearly fucked up.
Yeah, exactly.
But then again, she's clearly fucked up. Incapable of committing murder. So, I don't know.
Right.
I don't know that necessarily. I mean, I definitely don't think she premeditated any of it. It seemed kind of more opportunistic. If it was another little boy walking, that probably would have been the target.
Right. That's true. That's probably true. Later, Norma Bell was given 3 years probation for breaking into the nursery school, and she was placed under psychiatric supervision. So at least she was held accountable for something because she was a very active participant in all of these things, except for Martin's death. But all the rest of it, you know, she was part of.
Norma.
Yeah. Norma. So now let's get to the why. Because in most cases like this, there is a reason why children murder. There are underlying causes that in Mary's case were not uncovered until long after her trial and incarceration. But we're not going to do that today.
That's part two.
Yeah. We're going to get into...
Your shoddy turned into a longy.
We are...
A two-parter.
Yeah, we're going to get into the details of her upbringing, her incarceration, and where she is now in part two.
Okay.
So So
I'm looking forward to it. Although I really fucking hate it, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. And I suppose I could have kept going because we're not that long, but I don't know how long it's going to take me to explain all the rest of it.
A 3 hour long part one. All right. Well, thank you. That was interesting. It's a lot of, the first and only time I believe I've ever heard of this case is on Deadly Women.
Oh, really?
Big fan of that show. Episode called
Obviously.
Kids Who Kill. I shouldn't say I love that show. That show's interesting to me.
That show is interesting.
I love Candace DeLong.
Yeah.
Thing I was picturing this entire time was the little girl actress who played Mary Bell in the really dramatic scenes of it all. Except for it's really sad. I don't know if it was Martin or Brian. Their mom, one of their moms, was on the show.
Oh.
Yeah, it was on Deadly Women. And it's really fucking sad.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah, it's horrible. Yeah, but all I could think about was that little girl who played her. And I don't even know what the real Mary Bell looks like.
Well, and the reason that I thought this was like an old case is because, A, her name is Mary Bell, which sounds like an old-timey name, right? And then the pictures of her.
I don't like her, but I like the name, actually.
And the pictures of her, she's like, look, she has a little page boy haircut, and the pictures are all in black and white. And so I was like, oh, this has to be from the 18th century. Because you don't, like, the pictures I've seen of her, it's just her face and her hair. Like, there's no clothing as a reference point, which the clothing obviously would tip me off to that it's 1968, not 1868.
It would tell you exactly that it's 1968, would it, Mom?
Well, it would tell me that it's more in the 60s era than in the 1860s era.
I would say like 50s to 70s.
Which is what I was picturing it to be in the 1800s. So there we are. There's where we leave it.
Well, I enjoyed it and hated it all at the same time. So
yes,
thank you.
Bad.
But you did a really good job of presenting it. I was actually thinking, I really like the way that you present your cases. I was thinking that the entire time. I was like, man, I just do it so chronologically. I need to do like build up. You're a great storyteller.
Thanks.
All right. Well,
I do the what and then the why.
Yeah. And then the who.
And sometimes not always. Doesn't always work out. But I was like, in this one, like I started doing like her background and stuff. But then I was like, I should just really go into all the shit. And then I'm going to go into the why and what happened.
Yeah.
Because that's equally as horrible.
Yeah.
I don't want to say it's more horrible, but it's pretty fucking terrible.
It's all pretty bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I really like the way you present your stories.
Thank you.
I think you should be in that chair more often because I like you're very engaging for me. But I also like that you edit. So I'm currently on an editor's strike.
Oh, clearly. So, and then I have part two of this one. Then I'm going to get back to the one that I was working on that was long. That's the reason I started doing this short one that's not really short. So here we are.
Wherever you get there, there you are.
Yeah. Well, because I've ended up like...
Or however you get there, there you are.
Because I've ended up reading books about these. That's what happens. And then when you read books, then you need to corroborate the information in more than one location other than the book. So once you've read a fucking book and then you go on the internet in 80 different places, it becomes not so short.
She's reading books over here, people.
Yep. All right.
I read books too.
Thank you guys. Thank you, Daphne.
Thank you. Follow us on Instagram to see her little boy haircut in the 60s.
A page boy.
Page boy haircut in the 60s at That's Disturbing Podcast. Send us a Gmail. I don't know why you want to send us a Gmail, but you can do that. That's disturbingpodcast at gmail.com. You can fill out a case request form, which I only spent forever and a day building that website and making it beautiful and lovely for all of our followers or anyone who might feel so inclined to check it out.
Right.
And that's disturbingpodcast.com. And again, a case request form is there and that'll go straight to our Gmail account. Sorry, I just felt the need to do it. I don't know why I'm doing it in this voice.
Why you went to that voice.
Yeah, why I went to that voice.
All right.
Going once, going twice. Send us a Gmail.
Right.
Send us a case request form. Follow us on the gram.
Right.
And we'll see you on the flip side.
We will. And go Buffs, because today is the Rocky Mountain Showdown.
Yeah. Go Buffs. Bye-bye.